the ninth canto, chapter 20, text number 21. The voice said, O Maharaj Dushmanta, a son actually belongs to the father, whereas a mother is only a container, like the skin of a bellows. According to Vedic injunctions, the father is born as the son. Therefore, maintain your own son and do not insult Shakuntala. Purport by Swami Gracious Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. According to Vedic injunction, Atma Vai Putra Namasi. The father becomes the son. The mother is simply like a storekeeper because the seed of the child is placed in her womb, but it is the father who is responsible for maintaining the son. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he is the seed-giving father of all living entities, aham bija prajapita, and therefore he is responsible for maintaining them. This is also confirmed in the Vedas. Eko bhavam yo vidadati kaman. Although God is one, he maintains all living entities in different forms are sons of the Lord. And therefore, the Father, the Supreme Lord, supplies them food according to their different bodies. The small ant is supplying a grain of sugar, and the elephant is supplying tons of food. But everyone is able to eat. Therefore, there is no question of overpopulation. Because the Father, Krishna, is fully opulent, there is no scarcity of food. And because there is no scarcity, the propaganda of overpopulation is only a myth. Actually, one suffers for want of food when material nature, under the order of the Father, refuses to supply him food. It is the living entity's position that determines whether food will be supplied or not. When a diseased person is forbidden to eat, this does not mean that there is a scarcity of food. Rather, the diseased person requires a treatment of not being supplied with food. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord also says, Bijam, Mam, Sarva-bhutanam. I am the seed of all living entities. A particular type of seed is sown within the womb, within the earth, and then a particular type of tree or plant comes out. The mother resembles the earth, and when a particular type of seed is sown by the father, a particular type of body takes birth. Om Agana Samirandasya, everyone can chant. Om Agana Samirandasya, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militanyena, Tatmai Shri Gurave Namaha, Shri Chaitanya Manovistam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dharani Swaparam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuttapadakamam, Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha, Shri Rupam Satyajatam Sahagana Raghana Tandritam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Devam Sahagana Salita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Vanchakalpa Charuvyascha Kripa Sindhu Devasha Anishanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavyo Iyam Bhagavatam Nama Purana Brahma Samhitam Uttama Shloka Charitam Chakara Bhagavan Nishi Nishaya Saya Lokasya Danyam Shvashtaya Namaha Natsa Prayesha Vidreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavad Gita Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Narishtiki. Actually, we could go on and on. There's so many within the Bhagavatam slokas glorifying the Bhagavatam. And in other Puranas also, it's called the Mahapurana, the Great Purana. So we're very fortunate to have it. And I have to pray with Balaram and that I can speak something that's worthwhile. It might inspire devotees to, and all of us to surrender to Krishna more, understand something. This might seem like mundane information, but it's all important because we're in the material world. If we can't live like according to human standards and the mode of goodness, then it's very difficult for anyone to make spiritual advancement. So nowadays, we see how far off things are. There's so many single moms, right? Just an ordinary thing nowadays. Something like, in America, I don't know, something like 1 out of 4 children don't have both their parents. Even if they have 2 parents, one of them, the father, is not very often not their seed-giving father. But that's another thing, the one who takes care of the person is the real father also. The child's adopted or something. But the seed-giving father has responsibility, and the government's recognizing that, you know, so they have child support if they can catch the guy, even they run away. But so many men, and then they've made this, you know, so-called women's liberation. Women can go anywhere and go with any man at any time, and you know, they're thinking from the, because of birth control, there's no problem. They don't understand very much. Some people do, but people in proper consciousness, that little, you know, have some responsibility for whatever they do. We have to understand that we have to take responsibility. They'll make the argument that sex is natural, so you shouldn't not do it. The urge is natural, that's for sure, right? Even rishis in the forest, they get that urge. When Dasarath, the father of Ram, needed a jagya to have children, he was supposed to get one particular son of one rishi. The boy was completely pure. He'd never seen a woman in his life. You know, he was just completely pure in every way. But they sent some very beautiful dancing girls, and he got agitated, some of them. And then he was able to do the jagya. Of course, that was for the betterment of everyone, because it was Ramachandra's choice of how he's going to appear in this world at the time. And he didn't fall down into illicit, you know, connection and then run away. But this is what's going on. So here Dushyant is getting some kind of guidance from a voice. Who's the voice? Anybody know?
Unembodied voice.
Huh? Unembodied voice. Something Krishna. These things come up. Good. Nowadays men are so responsible. Many men are making, you know, one after another, women pregnant, just leave them. Be proud of themselves that they've produced so many children. They must be powerful, like a monkey. Because any animal, the Bhagavatam says, what is the use of a long life without proper consciousness? You know, the trees, don't the trees live long? Some trees live really long. Even ordinary trees live pretty long. I went on a Gurukuli bus tour once, and we went to the Redwood Forest in America. And those trees are thousands of years old. Some of the biggest room. And you can't see the top, they just go straight up. You know, they're very old. But their consciousness is not like the trees in the spiritual world, where every tree is fully conscious and can move around and can offer any kind of fruit that you want. You don't have to wait for the season, and you don't have to find a mango tree or whatever you want. You just, any tree will give you whatever you want. Because everybody wants to offer everything to Krishna, so they're capable of desire to give anything. I was thinking, this song we sing, the Jai Radha Madhava, it's an amazing song. When you think of Prabhupada one time, he started out and he said, this is the complete description of the spiritual world. After he sang that song, we start out with Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. So that's like the most intimate leelas of Radha and Krishna, the Kunja. Right? You know what Kunja is? Yeah, those big trees, and they come down to the ground, and you can go inside, and it's real nice, and it's private, and quiet and shady and but fresh, you know. I don't think we have those around here so much, but there's still some around in Vrindavan. So then Radha and Krishna go there in the night for their private life, you know. Of course, their intimate pastimes is misunderstood by most people in the material world because they have no idea of spiritual intimacy. All they know is bodies combining, not even mental, most people. They're just totally on the bodily platform of life. They advertise it everywhere, promote it everywhere as the ultimate goal of life. And therefore we have, you know, Prabhupada said, topless, bottomless chaos. Right? And that used to be just in the clubs, but now it's on the street, it's everywhere, you know, practically. And then gopis and the Balava, Giri Bharadadi, and the Leela of lifting Govardhan Hill, Krishna had to just stand there for 7 days. So it's described now, the gopis, they came close. Usually they couldn't, you know, stay around like that, but Krishna couldn't go anywhere. So they came close and they were all talking about, you know, how beautiful Krishna is and how nice everything about Krishna, and Krishna could hear them. And so that was giving the gopis a special pleasure when he lifted Govardhan Hill because they got that opportunity. Then Yashoda Nandana, of course we know so much, that's another, you know, intimate, and Krishna's Leela as a child, and the parental rasa, Mother Yashoda, you know, from the small baby. But all of Krishna's life she was thinking, you know, her whole pleasure was Krishna, whether people were reporting Krishna's misbehavior, or she's just relishing his beauty, or she's, you know, worried about feeding Krishna, protecting Krishna. Motherly love. I was at the Bhaktivedanta Manor yesterday and a whole group of young girls came by with their babies. They're having a mothering class. You know, they wanted to. The teacher doesn't have any children, though. It's interesting. So these are my children. The mother, they want to take care of their child. That's all they can think about, and they'll sacrifice anything. They can do amazing tapasya, right? Go without sleep and food practically to take care of their children, not care about other things. Of course, now in Kali Yuga, many mothers don't want to do that. They have children because they want to have sex, but then they think, why do I have to take care of this child? You know, it's troublesome and I can't have as much as that. The proper mother with good consciousness, which is many, that's their greatest pleasure, taking care of the child, loving the child. So Mother Yashoda had so much love for Krishna. Even when he was grown up, she held him on his lap when he came back, on her lap, and started to milk flowing, even though she was an old lady. Krishna is a grown man, Balaram also. So that's that. And then Yashoda Nandana, Braja Jana Nandana. Then he's also for all the people of Braj, Braja Jana. All the people of Braj, all they care about is Krishna. Right? They're always fascinated by whatever Krishna's doing. The naughty behavior, the milk stealing and everything, and the gopis were absorbed in that, trying to find ways to stop Krishna. You know, putting the yogurt up high and bolting the doors, but they could never succeed. And then they would take great pleasure in reporting to Mother Yashoda, you know, how bad Krishna was. But Krishna always got out of it. One way or another, he would get out of it. It's many nice stories. But one time he had yogurt all over his hand or something. Somebody caught him. He said, well, my calf, you know, fell in the yogurt and I had to get it out. And they were, you know, couldn't, but then he had some little toy calf. He showed them. Many, many things like that. So you know, we see in the movies, and if you go around Govardhan Hill, you hear about it all the time. There's so many little bhajan praying about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Yeah. When Krishna became all the calves and cowherd boys, and you know, everybody was loving their own children much more than ever, because it was actually Krishna. It was Krishna's mercy to give everybody the chance for direct service. And then Jamuna Tira Vanachari, Krishna plays on the banks of the Jamuna when he went out with the calves or the cows. Basically, they would just play, because Braj at that time was lush with grass, and the cows would just eat grass and be happy. One time, Mother Yasoda, she was worried that she should go with, you know, to make sure that Krishna and Balaram were all right. And of course, they didn't want their mother to come with. I mean, what boy wants his mother to come with when they go out to play? And so Balaram was convincing her that it's okay. He said, well, you know, it's no problem, we just play. We don't have to do it, there's no danger. The cows just follow Krishna wherever he goes, so we don't have to worry about them. We don't have to think about the cows at all, they all follow Krishna. So we just play, and finally they convinced her, you know, it's all right. She wanted Krishna to wear shoes. You know, like the gopis also were worried about Krishna even touching them. It was going to hurt his feet, but when he went out in the forest and there's pebbles and thorns, you know, everywhere in Vrindavan. And Krishna told me, so no, I won't wear shoes. And she was insisting. He said, but I can't wear shoes because the cows don't wear shoes. And he said, told her, if you make shoes for all the cows, then I'll wear shoes. A little difficult to do for all the cows. But they played on the bank of the Jamuna, and they just go swimming and chase animals, they imitate animals, they throw their balls, and they just throw this different fruit, like a bale fruit, you know, it's very hard, they use that for a ball. And they just played on the banks of the Jamuna. Now the banks of Jamuna aren't so nice in most places. Still some places, very, very nice. But in that time, there's many places where you couldn't see the ground, you know, for the trees. The sunlight didn't penetrate to the ground because there were so many trees. When I was on the Purikram a couple of years ago, I was saying, nowadays you really have to have like transcendental vision to, because, you know, they say, okay, we're in this forest or that forest, but there's no trees anymore. You know, every couple hundred meters or something, there's a scrubby little tree. And a few places there's about this big, like kind of a forest or something. But even 20, 30 years ago, there was big forest. But due to cutting down the trees for agriculture, due to floods, just due to Kali Yuga, it's changed a lot. But still, it is the forest. In the transcendental sense, it's all there, and all the Krishna Leela is there. Prabhupada, when I was in 1975, we went on a walk, and when you turned right outside of Krishna Balaram temple, there wasn't much then. Maybe a couple of those old places are still there, but otherwise there was nothing all the way to the highway. And it was forest further on a little bit. And Prabhupada looked out, he said, just look, it's all brown, it's all burnt, you know. He said, it's not raining. He said, they're not chanting enough. So the devotee said, Prabhupada, you mean if we chant more, it'll rain? He said, yes. He said, but don't chant for rain. Chant for Krishna's pleasure. Then it will rain. You know, if you're trying to make a deal with Krishna, it might not work. You know, you're going to do something for it. But, and we see that, you know, it's mostly dried up, except right after the rainy season. Then it floods. You know, nowadays, Kali Yuga, it doesn't rain, and when it does rain, it rains too much and ruins everything. And so they've created this situation. So Prabhupada is explaining here like the so-called food. There are actually plenty of food in the world. If the planet is producing, they have statistics like food three times more than population.
but doesn't get distributed properly. They even throw away like hundreds of tons of things into the ocean and burn it or keep it off the market, you know, in order to keep the prices, you know, not to, they're always making tricks that, you know, there's a shortage of something. And there's too many people, and they use that to encourage abortion. But then, you know, they'll also spend millions of dollars to rescue somebody who gets lost in the mountains or something. Save a life, you know, or to save the premature baby or save somebody that's all crippled up and keep them alive on life support. But at the same hospital will be killing so many babies in the womb. So it's impossible to understand what kind of morality and how these people make their decisions. Right? Except that it's somebody's economic gain. These men think that, you know, they're proud that they can pat semen and make a woman pregnant, but then they don't care to take care of the child. That's her duty. Right? But then the women become very also unhappy and create great disturbances in society. Prabhupada is trying to explain to them, you know, what if this freedom, you know, you either have to go begging or you have to have an abortion or you have to beg the government to give money, right? The government is supporting so many women that whose husbands won't help them, and so the fathers. Many times they don't even know who the father is. They just want to have a baby in America, and they're so bewildered. But then after the baby's a lot of fun for a while, then they get tired of it. Go to their mother and say, you take care of it, I have to get a job. And so it's totally insane. And there's no way to adjust these things without Krishna consciousness. They can't know, we see that no amount of laws and things is making any difference, right? And it's like, you know, Europe and America, the government tries to make laws for about all these things, but it doesn't work. You know, people just, they don't take any responsibility because their consciousness is still just so low. So devotees, we have a great mission, you know, to spread Krishna consciousness, to develop our own Krishna consciousness. Because the more we do that, the more we can influence others to take to Krishna consciousness. The more we have a society of, you know, loving relationships based on spiritual care, helping each other to advance spiritually. That includes taking care of the bodies and the minds and all the other things we have to carry with us for the time being. But also for that goal, whatever we're doing, the goal is going to be for advancing Krishna consciousness, for coming up to actually surrendering everything to Krishna. Then things will go very nicely. Like the food shortage, Prabhupada said in, I think it was wartime in Calcutta, there was a tremendous food shortage. The price of rice went up like 30 times, you know, really amazing. They said the temples, he would go to temples, but the temples somehow had food. You know, they had enough. Because Krishna provides. So he gives an example here when a diseased person sometimes he says he can't eat. You know, that it doesn't mean that there's no food. In fact, many times the richest man is the one that can't eat anything. One devotee told me he went to one house in Delhi or something in Delhi, and they were very, very opulent family, very, very rich family. And they provided the best, you know, vegetarian food they'd ever heard of. They had so many cooks, but the biggest, the leader, the head of the family, he could eat only like barley water. You know, but he was pious enough to not, he didn't enforce that diet on everybody else. But, you know, he, and this, you see many times very rich men, they have unlimited food in front of them, but they can't eat it. And then people that don't have any food, they're always hungry. It's Kali Yuga. It's a complete mix-up. And we should feel that, you know, it's our duty to preach more, to do anything about it, to spread the holy name. That's the only thing that can help. You see how karma is working. There's many, many rich people also that are married and they're very responsible. They want a child like anything. They try everything in the world and they can't get one. They go to every doctor, they go to yogis, they go to misfit people, they do everything. They take injections. And then you see, I see in Africa women, they got triplets or something and they're just beggars on the street. They don't even know how they got, they just keep getting, and they'll never have a husband, they don't have anything else, but they just keep getting. It's a terrible mix-up in Kali Yuga. Because people don't know what's the real goal of life. They're just trying to enjoy one way or another. Some people, you know, that's down to the level of just trying to get the next meal. They never think of much beyond that. But others, are, you know, they get more and more opulence and they're thinking of so many stupid things that they want to do. Bahu Shaka Yanantas Chai. The mind is many branched and indeed unlimited. You know, but the devotee's mind is fixed on one thing. Akeha Kudana. Just on Krishna. You want to surrender to Krishna. We want to mold our life in such a way that whatever we're doing is bring us and many, many other people to Krishna. Like this temple is doing a great facility here to bring so many people to Krishna. Now you have those beautiful conference rooms or seminar rooms or whatever you call it. How many seminars do you have? Huh? Somebody has to work on booking that all day long. Because we can even have seminars that are, you know, in sattvic or something, and then that brings people to the temple, giving prasadam, utilize these things. That's, Krishna is giving so much, and we're spreading Krishna consciousness so much, and so many people are taking it up all over the world. So we need to take care, like when new devotees come, it's like a child. And if we preach to them and they try to surrender, then we have to take responsibility to help them. Because we're bringing people in. And then if everybody's in that mood that we want to help everybody, we want to help each other, and we want to give Krishna to everybody, we want to have loving exchanges. What are the six loving exchanges? Dadi, Prati, Grihastha. Prichati. Bhunte, Bhojaya, Dejaya. Padvidhi, Prati, Prati. Offering prasadam and taking prasadam. The loving exchange. Like devotees went out yesterday and Food for Life, I went with them, so many volunteers come to get prasadam, so living entities out there. Then another, they were Indian, but they came from the Lions Club, but I don't know if they offered a Krishna, it was vegetarian. So many ladies were coming in their car, they all cook at home, bringing sabjis and rice and all kinds of, so the guys line up again. But devotees are giving prasadam, and then that makes it spiritual. Whatever we do, we give them the holy name, we give them prasadam, we give them books. Not just mundane help, not just bodily maintenance. But we want to teach them how to live. We want to teach everyone how to get out from the material world. How to get out from the bondage of, you know, lust and greed and anger and envy, illusion. You know, people are just completely bewildered by these enemies. And somehow they're thinking that they have other enemies. Prabhupada even said that's always a political ploy. You know, to keep the people thinking that there's some enemy in another country, or some danger somewhere that we have to be fighting. Changes every once in a while. I read somewhere somebody that Colin Powell, He was the head of all the military forces in the U.S. for some time. So he was telling a story. He was present at the time that the Gorbachev, you know, started the perestroika. And he looked at him and said, "So, General, now you'll have to find another enemy, to find a new enemy now, because Russia's not your enemy anymore. It's, you know, it's not more communist anymore." And, of course, they did. You know, right away, well, somebody else is the enemy, whoever it is, terrorists, you know. This country, or this is the axis of evil, and you know, everybody's thinking, yeah, you know, we're gonna kill them. You know, if we just eliminate this country, there'll be no problem in the world anymore. Right? If we just eliminate AIDS, you know, we get a vaccine. But you know, AIDS there's always been something like that in Ayurveda, one where devotees actually in India, he got awarded something that he found, like in the Ayurveda science, AIDS. Immune deficiency. But, you know, there's unlimited, no matter what they find a cure for. They found cure for many diseases that everybody was scared of. When I was young, it was polio. You know, every year we had to get a polio vaccine, and my mother wouldn't let us go to the big festival, the state fair or something, for fear that you'd contact somebody with polio. And now they wipe that out, and then there's something else, and, you know, AIDS, and then, but no matter what, there's birth, death, disease, and old age. They're not going to stop them. But one can transcend it, you know, by chanting the holy name. If we just practice that chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and really just understand that's for Krishna's pleasure. And when we're chanting, we're actually liberated. Although we may be chanting and at the same time thinking of our body and our mind and, you know, other things. But if we're chanting, we're actually liberated, because if you happen to die while you're chanting, right, what happens? Krishna comes and takes you. So what more do you need, right? If the goal of life is to go to Krishna, when we're chanting, then we've already achieved that. But we may not be fully aware of it. But we should try to understand that and try to chant with, you know, really begging Krishna for service and all the other good qualities that are required, you know, to hear the holy name purely. There's so many prayers by all the acharyas and so many examples. And everyone experiences the ecstasy whenever they chant. Now devotees are having these japa retreats all over. And they just, you know, they can't believe it. So how it completely changes their life, you know. And so many say, well, I've been chanting mechanical, you know, mishmash for 25 years. And all of a sudden, when they chanted the holy name, you know, you get in good association, there's nothing else. You have to check in your phone and your computer and everything, and just concentrate for 5 days. You know, tapasya. And then the ecstasy comes and devotees get really on a run. So we want to take responsibility for all the Krishna's children, all the spiritual children. There's so many people out there, whether they come from these broken families, they come from, you know, this and that, they come from paka families in the material world, but everyone is lost. Everyone needs to connect with Krishna. And it's our duty to make arrangements to help more and more people connect with Krishna. So Prabhupada started a society, an organization, make temples all over the world. You know, and everyone that has a home, that's a home, is a temple. A temple means it's a place for people to come and, you know, hear about, learn about Krishna, associate with devotees. Not just a place where somebody does some puja. That's the temple too, but it's on a low level. The real level is the temple is a place where we're making all kinds of arrangements to let people come and, you know, contact Krishna. So, thank you very much. Any questions? comment? Yeah.
I met yesterday. I met one vegan on the street.
Yeah.
And I was speaking to him for a while.
One vegan?
Vegan.
Yeah.
Vegan. There's three of them. And there's two girls and one boy. And I'd met him before, and then I met him outside the temple, and we were speaking for a little while. I brought him up to the shop, and they were serving Marcus Sand in the shop, and then I was feeding him Marcus Sand, and then they were explaining that they were vegan, so they couldn't get the milk.
Yeah.
So I tried to sort of give them some fruit. And then we were speaking about veganism, and I was saying, well, our principle is that we utilize the cow, when we utilize the milk, we don't necessarily harm the bigger body. And he was pointing at the milk from Tesco.
Yeah.
And then, you know where this comes from? And he was really sort of disappointed that explained that we have a farm and not for him. But he was really, he was looking at things in the shop that had like, they were really harmful to animals, and he was, he had a really good case, and I was trying to defend myself and defend our culture. But then Tarun Krishnapur, who he was explaining also, he came over and interjected, and he was explaining that Shivaram Maharaj recently was addressing this point, and he said that he won't drink milk other than what's coming from the farm, and he was out from the farm, and Krishna's cows are protected, so he's not going to drink milk anymore. So, I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah. He said we have to
let
the
farm out
and
speak
to the vegan.
Yeah, on that angle.
Yeah.
A lot of them think that milk is not meant for humans.
Yeah.
It's only meant for calves, and it's not meant for humans at all. That's another misconception. That idea how the dairy industry just exploits the cows. You know, McDonald's is all just the former dairy cows. So that, they do have a point. Of course, you know, when they buy vegetables, it was plowed with a tractor, and, you know, because of the tractors, you know, the bulls are getting killed, and it's Kali Yuga. And there is a, also a fact that if the milk is offered to the Lord, although it's not very quality, that cow gets some benefit. So if everyone, you know, would not take milk from the dairy, then they would, then the cows, the females, would be treated just like the males. They just fatten them up like anything and kill them right away. You know, rather than sort of take care of them for a couple of years. Some dairy farms take reasonably good care of their cows, but they definitely don't keep them their whole life. So it's all totally demoniac world, and you know, have to, if the ideal, that's what Prabhupada told us, you know, get your own, grow your own, get your own, you know. Nobody really understood exactly, you know, why he was saying that. They just thought it's a nice idea, you know. Now we're starting to realize more and more. And we need to have more, you know. Even that, like, one Ayurvedic doctor, he would, you know, because they talk about how milk is not for humans, and they do these experiments, they have people quit taking dairy products for 1 month, and they get free from so many diseases. Because they were eating ice cream and yogurt and cheese and, you know, like cold milk and, you know, so much of it every day. And then when they stopped, of course, you know, they're going to be more healthy. But he said when he put people on milk, you know, right from a cow milk, they didn't get sick from it. But factory milk, you know, it's very far removed from the cow. You know, it's been through so many different processes and adjustments and enhancements. They do many, many things. And they give the cow so much, you know, medicine. And so it's a very tough call. But Prabhupada, at least at that time, you know, the devotees told him sometimes the milk has fish oil in it. But still he said we had to, you know, so that we have to push for, the, you know, to provide all our things. We need a lot of farms. You know, you have to keep getting milk, you have to keep getting more calves. Than you. Of course, you can milk a cow for, we had one cow in Indonesia, and I've heard this in other temples. And, you know, the calf, and the calf quits taking the milk, if not after a fairly short time. And I told her to just keep milking her, you know, just really love her. And I think 10 years I kept getting milk, about 3 liters. By the time at the end it was about 3 liters a day or something. And it's not quite as tasty as the milk from the young cow that just had the calf, but you know, it's nice milk. And you can do that. They can keep giving if the caretakers keep giving a lot of love, but it's not economically viable, you know. And according to the Vedas, you're not supposed to make a business out of dairy. That you just keep the cows just to make money, just to produce as much milk as possible and make as much money as possible. It's a tough thing. Most of our restaurants, they have vegan things, and the vegans don't seem to mind. Although some devotees made a vegan restaurant in Tel Aviv, and the vegans there, they didn't want to eat, even like you don't want to eat in a meat restaurant or something. You know, they didn't want to eat in a restaurant that had any dairy stuff. They even looked and they said you shouldn't wear those rubber gloves if they have some kind of something comes from dairy and rubber. They know like every detail of dairy. But everything is exploiting the animals. That, you know, they're plowing the fields with tractors. That's a big factor. And the bulls are supposed to be doing that. The fertilizer, they use everything. So nobody's innocent. It's one of those economic considerations that in the short run is more money, but in the long run it's probably good. I don't know if those organic farms could keep the cow their whole life. Do they? I went to one state carnival in America one time, and they had a lot of dairy section, and there was one dairy girl there. She kept the cows her whole life. The guy said she loves these cows, but she must have had a huge amount of land, you know, because even for the fertile, even for the dung, the cow is valuable even, you know, their whole life if it's utilized for fertilizer, because you can produce so much more. Use it.
Make it safe, like quite a few people who are vegan and they become really self-righteous about vegan if they engage in environmental activities.
Right.
You know, with respect smoke though, they get intoxicated. They do so many things.
Yeah, they don't know very much.
But you know, they're sort of like, you know, I think it's like Father Thomas, like some of them may be so intelligent, but if they're not Krishna,
yeah, that's what they can't understand.
They're still eating sin.
Yeah.
They're not offering it.
They're not helping the cow. They're not keeping any cows and protecting cows. Or, you know, and they're not offering anything to Krishna, so they don't really know. Some of those hardcore guys, you know, that were devotees. They were vegan before, but then they wrote really good articles about, you know, how they changed. We had some of those devotees, it's like the shelter van and stuff. You know, they were vegans, and then they would write in their magazines, you know, how the vegan was not that great of a thing anyway, and how Christian consciousness was better. So we should try to provide for those people prasadam that's suitable for them, you know, and they'll get purified. Arguing doesn't help. Yeah.
I was just wondering what kind of good day the farm is like a valuable chance, but it takes kind of cows, so they must be getting some benefit from it.
What are they doing to protect cows? They're just not taking any dairy products.
They're protecting them, trying to protect their own body.
Yeah, they're thinking it's much healthier. Most of them think that milk is not meant for human beings. They have a lot of misconceptions. The sentiment about the dairy business being so demoniac is true. It is over demoniac. horrible. We can't talk about it in the temple. But, so that, to want to reject that is good, but then what to do about it? Like all these problems in the world, ultimately we know, at least from scripture, that only by spreading Krishna consciousness can it help anything. And by getting people to live right, you know. And, you know, take care of cows and utilize them. There's a lot of movement for that, especially among Indians now. That's why you have all this cow urine medicine and things like that. But they're valuable in so many ways. The sentiment is good, so if we can just give them prasadam that is suitable for them, then that's very good.
I give them some fruit. Mm-hmm.
And they take it, right?
Yeah, but
although that's probably, you know, who knows, you know, where that came from and what kind of fertilizer they use and how the pickers were slaves in America. All the fruit pickers, they're like slaves. You know, they're... No, they're literally, it's true. They're just slave labor. They're illegal immigrants and they just get paid almost nothing. And they have to move around all the time. You know. Otherwise, nobody could afford fruit. You know. Everything is like completely insane. And Prabhupada didn't get into all these details, but he just said, grow your own, grow your own, grow your own. Yeah, when the store shelves are empty, it will start growing on, right? Yeah, as soon as we go to Sainsbury's and there's nothing there, then we'll just start farming immediately, right? And we'll be milking our cows, but, you know, where are we going to farm here? All right, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.